Hello and welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And tonight, we look at what it takes to make it to the top of your profession. What do Jennifer Lopez, Colonel Sanders, and John Paul DeJoria have in common? What do they all share? What trait? I mean, these are all self-made millionaires. And one of their common threads is each one of them was homeless before they made it big. That's an interesting statistic. But let me ask you, what did Daniel Craig, this is the guy who plays James Bond, for those of you who aren't so savvy with the silver screen, what does Daniel Craig, Steve Jobs, you may know him, he's the founder of Apple, and Sylvester Stallone, for those of us who are a bit older, we know him as Rocky. You may know him as the Expendables. It depends which generation. What did they all have in common? These, again, were all homeless before they made it big. Steve Jobs, homeless in the university dorm, returning bottles for change and got free lunches at the Hare Krishna temple. Turns out to become one of the wealthiest people in the world. Daniel Craig sleeping in his car before he became James Bond. And also Sylvester Stallone was poor for many, many, many years. But let me ask you, what about Charlie Chaplin, one of the most famous silver screen stars of all time? John Woo, the director of the blockbuster Face Off and Mission Impossible 2, one of the most famous Chinese directors of all time. What does he have in common with Charlie Chaplin? And the final one, Michael Orr, the famous offensive lineman for the Tennessee Titans, if anyone's a fan of the NFL. What do these people have in common? As you may picked up on the trend, they were all homeless before they became multi-millionaires. Michael Orr, the book and movie The Blind Side is based on him. This is the African-American homeless child who was adopted by an upper-class white family and became a football star. Charlie Chaplin, we all know, and if you don't know, you know, I just really can't help you. If you don't know who Charlie Chaplin is, I can't do anything for you if it's that far gone. But, you know, what I'm trying to tell you is example after example is it doesn't matter where you're at. It depends on where you want to go in life. There are so many people who came into this world with absolutely nothing, born into poverty, you know. We even had Colonel Sanders, you know. Colonel Sanders spent a big majority of his life broke as a joke and becomes the grandfather of fried chicken. Now, fine, not everybody wants to be associated with fried chicken, but Colonel Sanders, you know, it just shows you that he believed so much in what he was doing, that his recipe, that he was going to make it, and people thought he was nuts. A homeless guy running around with a recipe for fried chicken. Okay, it's not an inspirational story at that point, but now it is, because the only thing is that kept him alive is he believed that this was a multi-million dollar, potentially billion dollar idea. So it doesn't matter whether you're homeless or you're living in a labor camp or, you know, you just got fired from your job or things just aren't working out for you. You have greatness in you and you can make it to the top. But you just don't stop believing. Sometimes life knocks you down and you're surrounded by darkness. It seems impossible to get back up. Sometimes you get knocked so far back and so far down that getting up itself seems so far away that you can't do it. Success looks as if it is forever out of reach. But I'm telling you, open your eyes and look around you. There is story and example after example of people who have been knocked down further down, who started with less and made it to the top. And that's what we want to look at tonight, is what does it take to make it to summit that mountain? And if Dubai can teach the world anything, is that the impossible is possible. This has to be the most inspirational town you could live in. Just drive down Sheikh Zayed Road, look at the names on the businesses on the signs, and then Google them, and you'll find out how many of those people are rags to riches story in your own backyard. But the thing is, is you can't have these big wins and this success without facing the darkness. I don't know any person who's gone through and has achieved greatness without knowing darkness, without knowing failure. Because success is not about big wins. Success is about pushing through the darkness when there is no light. It's about pushing through the pain and not giving up when a regular person would. Muhammad Ali, one of the greatest boxers of all time, was once asked, "Hey champ, how many sit-ups can you do?" And he said, "I don't know, because I only start counting when it hurts. The painful ones are the only ones that count." So if you're going through a tough time, if you're going through a setback, I want to congratulate you. You're taking your first few steps towards success, because the seeds of your greatest hour will be planted in your darkness. Tonight, we're going to look at people who have built businesses up and who've made a difference in this world. We have two amazing guests. Our first guest is a lady by the name of Alicia Mupin. She's the director of strategies at Aster DM Health, DM Healthcare, and a conglomerate that was founded by her father, Azad Mupin, who's also a very inspirational person, and you can also find his story littered over the internet. And his father's father was also an inspirational person. I mean, it's just inspiration seems to run in the family here. It's genetic, I think, in this particular case. But Alicia started acquiring a lot of her business knowledge in the finance and auditing field, where she worked for Deloitte and Ernst & Young, and she's also a chartered accountant, a member of the Institute of Chartered Accountants of Scotland, and she was a director of finance at Medcare Hospital and gains hands-on experience in the hospital industry, has in-depth knowledge of finance and operations, and she's also a fan of Bikram yoga and has founded her own Bikram yoga studio, and she also likes fast, healthy food, and she founded Kauai, the franchise of South African chain based in Dubai Marina. I hope I'm pronouncing everything right, but we'll find out in just a minute. Let's invite our guests to Eye on Careers here. Alicia, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Hi, Shane. Thank you so much for that kind introduction.
Yes, well, it's great to have you here with us, and I'm glad you found the studio. It's not the easiest thing to find out here, but I was interested to see. I mean, you're actually from a long lineage of inspirational people. I think your father's father was part of Gandhi's troop, wasn't it? As they drove the British out of the Indian subcontinent.
I think I am quite lucky that I'm born into a family of people who have inspired, who have led, and who have shown examples to others. I was not lucky enough to have met my grandfather, actually. He passed away before I was born. He actually passed away when my father was 15 years old. So I know that even now when people talk about him in the village, they talk about him with so much adulation and adoration because of the kind of impact that he had while he was there. He was a businessman. He was also an active political leader. And he had a huge following behind him. And I think my father sort of grew up watching this legacy that was created already. And I think it actually ended up being a little bit of a traumatic experience for him when he lost his father at 15. He comes from a very good family, a big family, very well-known, reputed, wealthy family. And then when he lost his father at such a young age, and he was the youngest of all his brothers and sisters, he at that point had decided that he wanted to maybe go into a career path that was a bit more secure. So whilst all his brothers ended up going into business and more entrepreneurship, he felt that he needed something more of a safety net for himself. And he ended up going into medical college and wanted to be a doctor. He was a lecturer for a long time in the medical college there. And then he sort of found his path to Dubai. And that's where I grew up.
But your father actually changed his name. Did I read that right? Or I heard something about that. He decided to, you know, at the age of 5, right?
Yes, yes.
That's a bit, you know, independently minded for a young 5-year-old, isn't it?
Yeah. Actually, what happens is I don't think there was a requirement sort of to register a name when he was born. At that point, they just register a birth as daughter of or son of. And then everybody used to just call him by pet name. But at that point, they were calling him Bava, which in Malayalam meant a baby because he was the youngest. So when it came to school, and they obviously did not know what to register him as, and his father just told them, okay, what would you, you know, they were thinking about names that they could consider, and he said, I want to be Azad. He chose his own name because at that time it was the time of the freedom when the independence happened, and there was a freedom fighter by the name Azad, and he wanted to be named after him.
Wow, that you know, that must be a bit of a confidence builder as a 5-year-old when you name yourself, you know, I am Azad. So that's kind of the lineage that you come from, where almost anything's possible. And so your father had built up quite a robust healthcare business that you kind of grew up in.
That's true. So he actually came over to Dubai in 1987. So that was around when I was 5 years old, and he started practice with one of his friends who was a practitioner in Ajman. In fact, he had actually come here on a charity mission. They were trying to build a mosque back home, and he had only come to collect some funds for that. And when he came here, his friend sort of prompted him, saying that, why don't you come back? Why don't you stay here? There is a requirement for physicians here, for doctors here, and this would be a good place for you to build some practice, build a career, have a nice life, because there is a lot of potential. At that time, Dubai, of course, as you would know, is nothing like it is right now, and I'm not sure he himself saw what the potential was. But he did sort of take it up at that point because his friend had recommended, and he came back and he joined him. And slowly, after a couple of years in Ajman, he felt that his friend himself prompted, saying that maybe Ajman's not the right place. I think most of the activity is happening in Dubai. And why don't you consider setting something of your own in Dubai? That was when he set up his first medical center. He set up a single doctor clinic. He was a physician, a chest specialist, and he set up his practice there with 3 support staff, you know, a nurse and someone to attend calls. And that is where everything started. Now we have actually over 180 establishments.
Whoa, 180?
Yeah.
Facilities. Oh,
yes.
My God.
We
That's
are,
huge.
Yes, I know. It's great to see sort of the way that the company has been growing. We are in all the GCC countries. We have presence in UAE, in Qatar, in Oman, in Saudi. We are going into Bahrain now and Kuwait. Also, Jordan coming up. We already have hospitals in India, and we're just expanding to Philippines as well.
This is a story of Alicia Mupin, the Director of Strategies at Aster DM Healthcare. We'll be back in just a minute with her insights on building a conglomerate, a pan-regional conglomerate. So stay with us.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here with Alicia Mupin, the Director of Strategies at Aster DM Healthcare. Welcome back to Eye on Careers, Alicia.
Thank you, Shane.
So for those just joining us, Alicia comes from a lineage of activists. Her father's great, her father's father, which would be your grandfather,
right,
was, you know, part of the social movement that that was led by Gandhi in the Indian subcontinent. And now her father has gone on to become a famous doctor on many levels and built and businessman and built a healthcare conglomerate, pan-regional, with over 180 facilities. Which she now is a major part of and player in. So, Alicia, I don't know if that sounds correct, or feel free to.
No, that's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay. So maybe just tell us how your career started. I mean, you did your high school here, then you went to University of Michigan in the States, I think, to do your undergrad.
Yeah. So Shane, yeah, I did all my schooling in Dubai, actually. I finished here, and I then decided I wanted to probably go away for a little bit. So that's when I applied to a few colleges in America. I got into Michigan. I was very excited about the program there because it had a liberal arts program as well as you could then go into a business degree. So it gives you a good flavor. I finished my undergraduate with concentration finance and accounting. And then I joined Deloitte briefly in Michigan itself, in Detroit. And then I actually had to move across to the UK. I went to England. I was working in Newcastle with Ernst & Young. I stayed with them for 7 years. I did my CA training with them. I qualified with them. I worked with them for a long time. And then I decided it was actually time for me to come back home. When I finished undergraduate, I was quite keen to actually come back and work with Dad closely because he was always somebody I looked up to, and I really wanted to kind of shadow him. But he was very adamant about the fact that I need to go out. I need to work for someone else. I need to work for a big institution. I need to learn from a setup, a professional setup, before I come back and take up something with him. So I felt that after qualifying and after getting some good years of experience, this would be a great opportunity for me to come back. When I came back, I actually joined a Medcare hospital. We actually, under Aster DM Healthcare, we have a few brands. We have the Medcare brand, which is a very high-end brand, and then we have Aster, which caters to the middle segment of the main chunk of the population. And we have recently introduced a brand called Access, which is mainly for the blue-collar workers and usually found in the industrial areas. So I started working with Medcare just because it was a finance role, accounting role, something that I understood because I actually did not have any experience in healthcare while I was working with Ernst & Young. Most of my clients were either retail or manufacturing clients. So this gave me a flavor and a glimpse and an exposure to the healthcare in short bursts.
Isn't it a bit tough doing healthcare, you know, in finance because at a certain point you start to put profitability numbers to diseases in a sense, don't you? I mean, when you look at, you know, some of these executives saying, heart disease is going to increase by 400% over the next, you know, that represents X amount of a profit for us. And then, you know, you see players like Cleveland Clinic investing millions and millions. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not just driven to help everybody, right? At the same time, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, how do you manage this thing where can we really put profitability to disease?
Just to give you a background on the reason for the growth of the company, my father, as a physician, he actually used to see 100 patients a day. It got to a point where he could not physically see more than that. His aim was to reach out to people because illness is a part of life. You can't avoid it. We will get sick. We are vulnerable. So at that point, he realized the only way he can see more people is by having a group of more people with him. And that is how it expanded. It never expanded with an intention of making a business out of it or to make a profit. I mean, he believes profit will come. It is a byproduct, but it is never the aim in healthcare, and it isn't.
I wasn't saying that. But what I'm saying, as a finance professional, your job is to make decisions.
Yes.
Now, we're going to invest $10 million in building a new practice.
Mm-hmm.
Do we do it on, you know, kidney transplant, or are we going to be investing in diabetes care center?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and at that point, you have to look, you know, you're the finance person, so you're looking at return on investment. So you can't make these decisions on pure need, because otherwise, you know, the facility won't continue to exist, right? At a certain point, you know, you're forced into that box.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at a certain point, your back gets turned against the wall, and you have to put profitability on these. Otherwise, or maybe you have a different way of making decisions. I know, but I wasn't not saying that.
Sure.
Obviously, your family is not in the healthcare business because of that, you know, and that was what the pre-discussion was of, you know, a long lineage of social activism through your bloodline.
No, I understand what you're asking. Our aim is to provide a comprehensive care. There are some things which, if you're talking from a clearly financial sense, might not be as lucrative, but then we do believe that there might be other things that compensate for it. But to give the full comprehensive care, we will have to take it as a whole. So, yes, there are sometimes decisions that are taken in terms of which department maybe to expand in, and those are things that, those are business decisions that are sometimes taken.
So how do you see the healthcare market now in the UAE? I mean, we've seen, you know, hospitals seem to be springing up like mushrooms. Mm-hmm. You know, some people are saying, you know, you look at Saudi German Hospital mm-hmm. is back-to-back with Zara, mm-hmm. the Zara Hospital. These are two of the biggest facilities in Dubai. Does it make sense that, you know, the way the healthcare system is rolling out these hospitals, is there enough to go around for everybody? Or, you know, are we going to see a correction down the road where some hospitals may be taken off the tombstone or put on a tombstone, depending on how you look at it? What's your take on where is this market going?
Shane, I think the market here, it is still in its infant stage, but I think that there has been a good level of planning that has gone into everything, just as there always is in anything Dubai does. You know, the recent announcement of the mandatory insurance in Dubai. So to set the stage for that, it's a two-year phase program. So everybody is going to be insured by 2016. So for that, we are going to have to start building the pipelines. Right now, there are instances where people are not availing healthcare, even when there is a requirement, because they can't afford. It's all out of pocket, especially for the lower end, lower segment of the population. So this way, there is a requirement, and you know, you are going to have your employers covering you. So I think even when we speak to the health regulators here, they are very conscious about sort of the demand that will be coming, and making sure they're matching it with the supply that they are approving in terms of licensing of facilities.
So there is some regulation. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it seems like, you know, the private equity houses and the investors are saying, oh, I have a healthcare fund, we invest in healthcare. Mm-hmm. And then you look at, you know, some of the larger business mm-hmm. Individuals, they're like, oh, we just invested in a hospital. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what do you know about running a hospital? You know, you just don't put up a bunch of cement walls and throw some doctors inside and you've got a hospital. You know, my prediction is that if you don't have the experience, operational experience in any business, you're going to have trouble finding your margins. So my prediction is some of these facilities are going to go either be absorbed by organizations that do know how to run them, or they'll be shut down.
The examples that you mentioned earlier, they are people who have experience running healthcare. They might be backed by private equity funds, just as we are. We've got private equity partners on board with us, but they do let us do the operation. They do not interfere in that. They give us advice and help when it comes to sort of professionalizing the corporate side of things, in terms of the company, in terms of the corporate governance and those side of things. But as far as running the operations is concerned, you are right. They will not be able to manage doctors or do what is probably done in the right attitude to run operations of the hospital or healthcare facilities.
Well, this is Alicia Mupin, the Director of Strategies at Aster DM Healthcare. She'll be giving her insight into the strategies and tactics of running a winning healthcare facility in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We are getting an insight into the healthcare market here in the Middle East, in the GCC, potentially globally, with Alicia Mupin, who's the Director of Strategies at Aster DM Healthcare. Here she is. Alicia, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Good to be back.
So, you know, it's exciting. You have kind of a very interesting view with 180 facilities under you and some key brands, like we all know, like Medcare, mm-hmm. Which is also right beside Safa Park. So you can get it's a good jogging area as well.
That's true. Be healthy.
It's a good location. But yeah. So what does it take, you know, when you look at the different strategies for healthcare? What do you really see as being the winning strategies for Dubai to develop this business, and where will individual players be able to fit in?
So it's actually getting to a point where there is a lot of consolidation happening for the even within the individual players. So I think if you look at the market right now, there are a lot of small players who have been around for a really long time. But now with the mandatory insurance that was introduced, it's becoming a little bit harder for some of those individual players to get things done, such as empanelment with insurance companies, getting their processes in place. So I do feel that going forward, it might be a little bit of a strain for them. So the likelihood is that there is going to be some consolidation, maybe doctor groups, clinics getting together, forming larger groups, because that is the way to sort of form a structure that will be easier to kind of manage the sort of numbers that are going to come through and also the system that is required to facilitate the volumes.
When we look at this region, on one hand, we're making huge strides. We have some big international brands that are opening up here. Moorfields Eye Hospital, Cleveland Clinic. There's some nice brands.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to pump, the talent into the region,
yes.
But we don't have the population. Historically, we've had one of the lowest numbers of doctors per thousand or doctor per capita in the world.
Yeah.
And even though we're, the fast as we mint doctors, the other critical fact is that the good doctors, as soon as they become good doctors, exit the region and get jobs in the States. And in fact, in the United States, they have an opposite problem. They had the highest rate of doctors per thousand, and they've doubled that ratio in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
By taking South Asian doctors. 50% of all doctors in the United States are South Asian. So
yes.
in effect, how do we win this game? If you train great doctors here locally, most likely there's a migration of talent out of the region.
Mm-hmm.
And to compound the factor, we're having a very high birth rate across the GCC, Africa, and South Asia regions.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like a perfect storm. As you fast forward into 2030, you're going to have a major problem.
Shane, to talk first about the GCC market, actually. Before, the problem was there were limited number of facilities, probably, especially if you talk about in UAE. But now with the population sort of increasing, you are seeing sort of the requirements being met up with facilities being set up and doctors also being bought in for that. Even though the population has not reached sort of the extent maybe that we are hoping to keep all the doctors happy and their hands busy, there are a lot of things going for the region, especially when you talk about UAE. The economics are much brighter. So when you're talking about getting doctors especially from the Asian subcontinent, people are happy to come here because the contracts are better. And there is the safety element and the quality of life that you get here that people might not have back home. Not everybody at this point wants to necessarily go over to the US or UK if they can have a good work where they get good skills, good experience, and have a good quality of life where they can raise a family. And I think especially over the last 2-3 years, we are seeing this distinct sort of increase in doctors being keen to come here. It used to be a huge challenge for us earlier because we did have to really go all out trying to get doctors to convince them about moving here because they felt that they can't be sitting here at the medical center seeing a cases because the demographics of UAE is you've got a very young population, so the kind of cases that you're seeing are also probably quite limited or more routine, nothing challenging enough for some of the specialists to be seeing. Whereas that itself is changing with sort of the demographics moving, with the sort of lifestyle diseases that are coming into the picture. So that combined with the quality of life that the UAE has to offer, you do see a big, a bit more attraction towards doctors coming here. As far as going to back home is concerned, this is a big challenge. There is a huge brain drain that is happening. We have, having said that, it depends on creating an environment, creating facilities where they have good technology, where they have good setups, where they again will be given good packages that they are happy with, And I think that we have recently just set up a 500-bed hospital in Cochin, in Kerala, actually. And we have got a large number of our doctors who have come back from the US and UK to join the facility. People go, and then after a while, they realize there is something about being back home, closer to family, closer to your parents, closer to your brothers and sisters. And if you are able to give them sort of professional satisfaction as well with facilities that keep them happy, they are willing to come back. And we have seen this happen with our unit itself just in the last 6 months.
But I think one of the things, you know, when you talk about quality of life and everything, you know, as they say, no money, no honey, no finance, no romance. And when we look at here, we have this huge healthcare growth and all these other statistics, but we're still 30 to 20% below European compensation bands. So doctors doing the same job in the UK are making 20-30% more. And you may say, okay, well, we don't have tax, but there is tax, because you know, if you have 2-3 kids, and you're going to pay 50-60,000 dirhams a kid for school, and then you're going to pay this, and you're going to pay XYZ, and then they just say, I don't know what I'm getting into, I'm not going to take the jump. So I really not sure I agree with the fact that the attractiveness level's there. And why do we have this kind of growing gap of, like you're saying, we don't have enough specialist doctors, but at the same time, we're not willing to pay for it. Is the Middle East simply not willing to pay for professionals? Are they simply not willing to pay for talent?
No, I don't think that is the case. Like I said, it is an evolving market. People are just realizing the requirement. I think as a country, there is a huge outflow of patients who are going out, and the government funding people going outside for treatments. They do realize sort of the cost that is happening, and they also want it to be to become self-sufficient, and they also want to be a center for healthcare tourism here. They want to avoid have people avoid going outside, and whereas attract people from all over GC to come to UAE for their healthcare needs. And there are a lot of activities, and there are a lot of new institutions that will be coming. And I think once we create that, then the experts start flowing in, and then the compensation bands. Again, Shane, I do believe that the hospitals here, they do pay as required, because otherwise we will not be attracting the physicians. So I don't think the pay is as much of the concern as much as the type of cases coming in. So once we are able to sort of attract patients from the GCC itself, and those numbers increase, I think that will create a huge change in the whole dynamics.
So this is basically the healthcare wars, that we want to take the patients from Kuwait, from Qatar, from the stands, from anything within a stone's throw of the Middle East. We're going to pull that away. Is that, that's what it is? So we're basically part of a spearhead here to knock off any of the GCC medical tourism, rather than going to Thailand or Singapore or wherever they might go, or India, we want to take it to Dubai.
Yes, I think Dubai is very well placed actually for that already, with the connectivity that we have, with the sort of other activities that people can enjoy here. It's actually something very attractive for people to come to. There are no language issues if you're talking about people coming from the GCC itself. There are leisure activities for other people, the family who come with you. And once you combine that with having all these institutions, just like you mentioned, having the Moorfield here, having other specialty hospitals, we have our Medcare orthopedic and spine hospital, which we started. We have patients coming in from Saudi and Oman and Qatar, so many of them, and there is a real requirement for it. So when there is a real requirement, and there is a, you know, we can set up facilities like that, it is something that needs to be encouraged and is being encouraged by the government strongly.
This is Alicia Mupin, the Director of Strategies at Aster DM Healthcare. Coming up, she's going to be talking a bit more about her entrepreneurial flair and some of her startup businesses. So for anyone out there who's on the precipice of taking the plunge and becoming an entrepreneur, this is one segment you don't want to miss. We'll be right back.
Dubai Eye 103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We're here with Alicia Mupin, the Director of Strategies at Aster DM Healthcare. Alicia, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
It's it's great to have you here. For those of you just joining, Alicia's kind of walked us through one of the lives of one of the iconic healthcare professionals here, her father, Azad Moopen, who built the huge healthcare conglomerate of 180 facilities called, and it's all under the umbrella of DM Healthcare. You know, one of the brands is Medcare Hospital, which we're all very familiar with, and so many more. And she also gave us a good insight into what's happening in the healthcare market and where is it all going. Now we're going to explore a little bit more of her entrepreneurial flair, where she has started up a couple of her own brands. One is Roar.
That's right.
Yeah. Which maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, Roar is actually a Bikram yoga studio. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with yoga, so this is hot yoga. It's where you do yoga for 90 minutes. It's got 26 postures.
90 minutes?
Yeah,
Jesus.
It's long as well.
My God.
Yeah, and in the heat.
Just got stressed out just from that. I was like, whoa, my fat cells were like, no way, we're not doing that.
No, stay far away from it. So it's actually doing yoga in 43 degrees heat. My first,
like, it's not hot enough for you guys here. It's like,
kind of,
you know,
I guess,
like we need more heat in here. Did the carpenters think you're nuts when they were putting heaters into the building?
They were like, we have never done this before. What are you doing? I'm actually quite fitness oriented, so I do like my workouts, but it's always been sort of confined to the gyms, and I do go for my Zumba classes or my LBT classes. But when I had moved back from England, and I was talking to one of my friends, she had actually become a Bikram yoga teacher in LA, and she'd taken me for my first class here in Dubai, and I remember going for my first class, and I loved it. I thought it was my idea of hell to go in to do yoga in a hot room in Dubai. But after going there, I did really enjoy it. I mean, 90 minutes, it did seem like forever, because all my gym sessions are 30 minutes. I stretch it to 60 minutes just to tick a box. And to be inside that hot room for 90 minutes, I thought would be painful. But she looked amazing. She was so much stronger, looked leaner. And I think I was a bit inspired and wanted to see what it is all about. And that's how I went for my first class. And I was a convert. I loved it. I thought it was amazing. Yoga itself is something that I've always really enjoyed. And whereas Bikram is a bit more intense. It's like boot camp yoga. So it's not as relaxing. You can't relax. How do you relax? It's so hot. So you're trying to focus on the postures. You're trying to concentrate. You're trying to stretch through it and push through it. So that's when I thought it would be quite nice to sort of set up my own studio. And I set it up with a couple of friends of mine. They're both instructors. One of them is running the studio right now. And it is something that I really...
Does it make money, though? Or is it just like a hobby?
No, there are people.
Is there big money in yoga or what?
I don't know about big money in yoga.
Or
but
are
it's
you kind of stretched as an entrepreneur?
We've been around for a couple of years. We're in Media City. It's a good crowd out there. So after work, you do see a good crowd coming in over there. It's something that I'm very proud of, and I'm very happy about.
And once you work up an appetite there, you can go to Kauai. A franchise from South Africa. Sounds like it should be from Hawaii, but it's South African. What's up with that?
So it was a group of friends who were actually in the island of Kauai in the Caribbean. And then they moved to South Africa. I think one of the boys was following some girl and ended up
in... Oh, my God. He moved from Hawaii?
Yes, to Cape Town. Cape Town doesn't sound too bad to move to, though. I mean, it is a beautiful town.
Beautiful.
Exactly.
Beautiful. So, okay.
But when he moved to Cape Town, he felt that he missed sort of the food of the islands, the fresh, healthy, wholesome food that he was getting there. And that's when they started as a smoothie bar.
Was he broke when he started? Was he like living in his car and making smoothies by day?
It has to be a story like that,
was
right,
it?
John? Well, they were just college graduates who had gone out. So I don't think they started with huge amounts of money, obviously. But I don't think he was living out of the car just yet. So they started as a smoothie joint and then added wraps, added sandwiches. And now they've got over 130 outlets in South Africa, actually.
Over how long?
130 outlets over around 25 years.
Wow. Well, yeah. That's like so long. 25. I thought it was going to be like he was living in his car and then 5 years later.
Later, yeah.
No, it's, you know, the success is not a sprint. It's a marathon. It takes time. Yeah. Like, how long did it take your dad? You know, how long was your dad been building that your conglomerate over how many years?
Actually, today, 11th of December, we've just completed 27 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's thank you. Thank you.
It's the birthday episode.
It is, actually. Yeah. You're right.
It's my birthday as well. Actually, on the 12th, though, but not the 11th.
Well, like we're almost there.
Yeah, like in a couple hours, I'm going to be like celebrating by myself in the studio. It's going to be awesome.
That would be great. You have to love what we're doing, isn't it? It's all about passion.
Yeah. Well, I think someone left me like a leftover bagel from the last show.
I saw that when I was waiting outside. I can bring some cake around. Healthy cake. Maybe a muffin from Kauai.
So what's your advice now? You've done two startups. What's your advice to anyone who's thinking of taking the jump?
You have to jump in wholeheartedly with everything that you've got. I've only got into ventures that I'm completely sold on, that I'm completely passionate about, something I want to drive, that I'm so keen on. There will be obstacles. There are 100 different things that will come your way. And you're going to have to pull through it. It's not going to be easy. There are so many instances. I mean, with the healthcare conglomerate, it is different because over 27 years, we understand the business a lot more. We know how to do things. Whereas which is a great thing about my own, with my Roar or with my Kauai, those are my babies. Those are things that I'm learning little by little about different industries, about managing them from start, from the beginning, from laying the foundation, laying the bricks. And all I can say is that you're going to have to pull through. A lot of businesses, as they start in 2-3 years, it falls out. But you're going to have to, put in the hours, be passionate, keep working towards it, and things will have to turn.
Do you think passion's really? I think passion's overrated, isn't it? I mean, when you look at it's more tenacity. I mean, at the beginning, it's not fun. I mean, a lot of people who, like Dr. Adil, for example, Adil Trading, Dr. Mm-hmm. Dhanajay Dutta, yeah. For example, when he was started his first little spice shack in Dira. I mean, they weren't that excited about it. It's not like, look at this turmeric. Look at it. Feel how fine my turmeric is. It's amazing.
You
I'm just going to grind this out. This is my job. I'm going to push it through. Yeah. No matter how much it sucks, I'm not going to quit.
When I say passion, what would be more suitable is maybe grit factor. But you need to have the passion behind it to sort of grit through it and say, whatever comes my way, I am going to fight through it. I'm going to make this happen.
But don't you think so many people, they get distracted by this passion thing and they're like, I just haven't found what I'm passionate about. I'm just not really passionate about anything. And then they waste 3-4 years trying to find something they're passionate about. No, just pick anything. I'm selling, electric cords. I'm just going to push it until I'm number one in electric cords. I'm going to get on with my career. You look at Yogesh Mehta, who has the number one chemical trading business in the world. He wasn't like, look at our acetone. It's so amazing. I just sold some, how many liters of acetone. It's like, no, he's like, you push on and you make it happen. Do you think that's one of the misnomers for people out there that, you don't sit around and wait for passion, like the head of KISS, famous guy who put has a lot big tongue and everything. And he says, passion, you don't need it at all. You're a writer. You wake up at 6 a.m, you start writing, even if you hate it, even if you're not inspired, and you'd keep driving it and push on through. Right. And he's very successful.
I guess it's different philosophies on it, isn't it? I definitely believe that whatever it is, even if I am selling a faucet, I'm going to have to be passionate if I am going to be doing that job well.
Oh, come on. When you were an audit manager in Deloitte and you were like in the bottom of Michigan and you were like, my God, are you done with those taxes? Can I audit that? Are you done with those? Let me see those financial statements because
I used to actually get excited about, we auditors get very excited about colors, the green ticks and the red ticks. So I used to be a big nerd about that. But even even Shane, when I was in college and I used to work in cafeterias, it was not something that I needed to do, but I did that. I loved it. And I was swiping cards, I was cleaning dishes, and I still wanted to do it being happy because I was learning. I was either meeting people, I was earning, I would find, get the value for money, understand what it means, and enjoy day as it comes each day. It's no point thinking, I don't know what is my future, what am I looking, what am I living for? People, when if you're going to do that, you're not going to live today, and I don't think
you got to live in the now. Yes, you got to enjoy
the present. This is your present, so you have to enjoy it and live it like that.
I think when I'm reading the subtext, what you're saying is just really having an attitude of gratitude. And whether you're ticking green boxes at Deloitte or cooking food in a cafeteria, you know, it's all part of a larger plan that's beyond your imagination. You just need to be happy in the moment.
You have to make the most of whatever opportunity comes your way. That is how I would take it, because everyone's going to have different platforms, different things knocking on their door. So you've got to see what is there in front of you and make the most. So when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade.
And when you work in a cafeteria, the best thing is you get free food.
And that helps.
That's something money can't buy.
That's true, I guess.
Well, Alicia, thank you so much for coming out with us on Ion Careers. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.
It went too fast, you know. We didn't get enough time. So hopefully we can have you on again sometime.
I'll be around anyways to cut your birthday cake.
Oh, okay. Fantastic. Okay, thank you so much.
Take care.
That was Alicia Moopen, the Director of Strategies at Aster DM Healthcare. And coming up, we have someone who's really been one of the foundation stones of the CSR NGO movement across the United Arab Emirates. We have Claire Woodcroft-Scott, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Emirates Foundation. And anyone out there who's thinking of having a career in the NGO space or getting involved in CSR, I think this will be one amazing interview. Claire is someone who's really created huge impact in the NGO space across the region, and really can't wait to hear what she has to say about this space. And in fact, it's becoming a more and more exciting spot for people to actually chase their careers into, that if you can actually have a career in a CSR and an NGO space, and we have so many of those springing up, and they can be quite fulfilling. So stay with us. We'll be right back in a moment with Claire Woodcroft-Scott, the Chief Executive Officer of Emirates Foundation.